Welcome to the season 3 premiere of Teed Up, where everyone's a sports expert.
Podcast where we care about sports.
We're an original podcast created and produced by Long Beach State student-run newspaper, the Daily 49er. I'm Naoki.
I'm Maddie G.
And ladies and gentlemen, season 3 is upon us. Yes, to let us come back for a third time. Don't know how this has happened, but it's only right that, you know, we ended last season on a little bit of a...
We got Gary on.
We got Gary on. We got Barb on. We had JJ Fiddler on here. Bobby Smitherin. We had Amy Wright. So it's only right, right, that we kick off season 3 with an absolute banger. We dressed up.
We did. No sports jerseys for the first time on an episode. I made the comment of.
Yep. And Maddie, won't you let us know who we got on the show today?
Yes. We have President Jane Connolly and then Scott Appel. Big guests.
Welcome to Teed Up, guys.
Didn't think we'd make it to this day when we started season 1 and it was just 4 people talking about sports.
Yep.
Host changing constantly, but here we are.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I'm happy to be here. I talk a lot about sports too.
Whoa. Jane does. She's a super fan. So I'm happy to be here as well, guys. Thanks.
Just a quick little icebreaker. This is the first episode of season 3. So this will be coming out on the, what is it, the 24th, I think, of next week. Mm-hmm. And so the semester hasn't officially started. We were recording this on January 19th, so classes haven't officially started. But how was your guys' break?
It was fun for me. I got to see my children. I have 3 children and their children. So we have 5 grandchildren. So we spent about a whole week at least together, some longer, some a little shorter, coming and going. But that was a real treat because I don't usually get to see them all together. So wow. I love that.
I had a wonderful a visit with my sons. They're both in college and they came home. And it's especially nice for me and probably for Jane during the Christmas holiday because the campus closes. And so the only really the police and the construction guys get up to no good if there's no good getting up to. And so it's very quiet for us, I think. Is that right, Jane?
Yes, it really is quiet.
It's nice.
One of the questions we wanted to ask was, did either of you guys play sports growing up? And if you did, what sport was that?
Well, I played high school and college basketball. But I also, after I graduated and didn't play basketball anymore, I played a lot of tennis. And I wish I had kept on playing tennis. But at some point, I thought, oh, I have to be in the office all the time. And so I stopped my tennis. But I certainly enjoyed, and I think I learned a lot just in life skills from both tennis, but especially from basketball.
Wow. That's great. Well, I come from actually a big Long Beach volleyball family. In fact, my dad was the assistant coach here at Cal State Long Beach when I was a little kid, and I got to travel with the team. But by the time I got to high school, we didn't have a boys team at Wilson, so I switched to high jump, and I was actually the Moore League champion in 1983 for high jump.
Whoa. I didn't know that about you.
Fun fact. Ooh. So
that is a fun fact.
Yes, long time ago, before you guys were born.
We were the champ.
That's what I love about it. Like when we had JJ Fiddler on, just hearing so much about the Long Beach sports and just the community. So Moore Park MVP. Nice. It's just so fun.
Go Bruins. Mm-hmm.
And then what's like your favorite sport to watch, whether if it's here on campus or on the professional world?
Well, it kind of depends. I love going to the pyramid because I get to sit right on the court. You know, it's a little scary with men's volleyball and with women's volleyball too, to be fair. So I love watching them, but I have to say, when baseball season rolls around, and I can look forward to going Friday night, and you know it's so chill, and I don't have to worry about a ball hitting me because we did remember we bought that netting to go all around. Scott,
I remember
because he counts all the dollars. Yeah. So I couldn't say I had a favorite. The one that mystifies me the most though is water polo. I go over to watch water polo, and they're always they're blowing their whistles, but I can't see what's going on. I mean, it's fun when they score, but there's a whole lot of other stuff happening, so it's fun.
And I love the NFL when I'm home, but here on campus, I try to get, now that I'm more involved with athletics, I try to get out to a lot of the games, but especially women's basketball and women's volleyball and men's volleyball. Those are just great sports and great fun.
What's your favorite NFL team?
Well, it's the 49ers, really, but my son loves the Chargers, so we've been watching the Chargers lose all season.
I'm an Eagles fan, so it's a rough time.
Yeah.
It's a very rough time.
Very rough time. My son is in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and so, of course, he's a Packer fan. Right. So the family has a little joy From the cold over there.
Right in the Jordan Love. Yeah.
thank you for eliminating the Cowboys, by the way.
Yes.
As an Eagles fan.
Yes.
We didn't win our playoff game, but we still won our playoff game because the Cowboys didn't make it past the first round again.
Yeah, and then obviously I'd imagine year two. I have way less free time than we do. But when you do get that free time, what do you like to do in it?
I read a lot. So that's probably it. You're right. Yeah. I don't get too much free time because there's always a backup of, well, this is a report that I should have read last week. Oh, I have a moment. Yeah. And I was doing that today because I didn't have too many appointments. So I was reading things that had been in my inbox for a week.
I bake a lot, and I bring goodies for Jane and her family sometimes, and people on campus sometimes. And then I actually read every day.
Whoa. What's your favorite thing to bake?
Like brownies and cakes and things like that. It's usually somebody will say, oh, I want this, and then I'll go make it for him.
His brownies are epic.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Wow, I got to put that on my resume as soon as I get out of this.
You should. And say, Jane said.
Jane Conley.
Yeah.
Put that on a t-shirt somewhere.
It's even better than a resume, isn't it?
Yeah, put that on a t-shirt. So we want to get things rolling. And I just looked this up, President Connolly. As of this month, this is your 10th year anniversary here at Long Beach State as our president.
Well, as being appointed.
Appointed.
I was appointed in January of 2014. I didn't arrive until July, but it certainly feels like 10 years. I give it to you like that, yes.
But what would you say have been some of the highlights of your decade here at Long Beach State?
Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's hard to narrow them down. I'd say one of the things that I get the most fun out of is getting the reports about, you know, for example, the Daily 49er wins, you know, a journalism award, or our rocket team gets first in something, or moot court, or our forensic team, and it goes across Pacific Standard Time. Our jazz ensemble wins awards all the time. So those are really high points for me. In addition to, of course, our faculty are constantly getting noticed and programs are being put into the top 10, top 5, number 1. So those are really highlights for me because, you know, I know real people are involved in that and they're really getting a lot of satisfaction and professional advancement because of it. So it's really the highest points are the achievements that the university makes. Like I loved it in the last U.S. News and World Report. We were ranked as number 1 in social mobility. Wow. So I was like, yes, because that's, you know, for many, many students, that's why they come to college. It's not the only reason to come to college, obviously, but they're hoping to get a better job than maybe their background would have predicted. So I love that.
And how does it been, you know, being, because you were also the first woman to be named president. What was that been like in terms of like leading, kind of representing a group of people that, you know?
Yeah, well, I was the first woman in a lot of different situations. So I have given up the idea I can represent women. I just have to do me the best I can, you know. So, yeah, I think it was an easy transition. Have a great team. There were already some women who were vice presidents, and so I didn't feel that at all. Mm-hmm. I think the related to sports, I think there was some concern from perhaps some of the athletic department leadership that a woman would not care about sports. Mm-hmm. And that was a little kind of rumor that was floating around. Oh, we better not hire a woman because she won't support our teams. But that person was wrong.
Oh, very wrong. Very,
very wrong. Thank you. Let's say that a few times.
And Scott, you said you were a Long Beach kid.
I was actually living in Pennsylvania, Eagles.
And when
I was recruited to the university, so I was living out of the state at the time. But this is my hometown, and everyone in my family, both my parents and my sisters, all went here. And so I never expected to work at the university. And it's such a joy to come back, and it's a lot different than being a student, being an administrator. But it's just, there's been so many wonderful things that have happened on this campus in the time I've been here. It's a great place to work.
Yeah, to take us through that, like, what does it feel like to kind of come back home after being away and then, like, you know, getting recruited to come back here?
Yeah, it was great because we were able to come home to our hometown and with our families, and we had a baby when we left, but we had a Pennsylvania baby, and so we brought that baby home, and everyone wanted us close because, you know, they wanted to get to know him. And you know, I think my story was a lot like a lot of people's. I got here and I thought, well, you know, I'll do this for a little while, then I'll go back to the private sector, where the money is. But it's a kind of place that kind of seduces you to stay. And I raised my family here, and it was hard. You know, my son was in 49er camp, and my other son was at the childcare center. And, you know, you go to the Carpenter Center, and you go to some dirtbag games. And then, you know, 18 years later, all of a sudden, you're sitting here doing a podcast in the basement of the library. Just like that, it happened.
The co-op.
That's exactly the path you were on. Who knew? Yeah.
Yeah, and so before, like, any of that could even be established, what were your two plans, like, in college, obviously? How did you eventually get here to being in administration?
Me.
Yeah.
Both of you.
Oh, yeah. I was so taken.
I'm not going to speak before Jane speaks. You go first. You're the president.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so, no, I didn't plan to be an administrator. Mm-hmm. I grew up in New York City. I grew up in the Bronx. At that point in the 50s and 60s, you know, I was a young woman. I was going to be a teacher or a nurse or something like that. Through just opportunities, got to go finish an undergraduate degree, obviously, and then went on to a PhD. And it was one conversation. I was a psychologist. I'm not licensed anymore.
No, you're still a psychologist, Jane. I can vouch for that.
I do practice every day, but not under that name. So I was leaving. I was graduating with my PhD, and my director of my program said, "Well, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to look for a job, you know, out there in community mental health or working in the schools or doing something." He said, "Well, did you ever think about being a university professor?" And he said, "You probably thought at some point that you knew more than they did." And the truth was, I often thought that because I was really cocky. And so I thought, well, yeah, I guess I could apply for academic jobs. And so I kind of fell into that. And then I became a department chair at one point at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. But it wasn't this big honor. You know, the faculty voted. And it was more like, okay, now it's your turn. Mm-hmm. But it turned out I felt good about it. I felt like it was a success. And then, you know, the dean asked me to be the associate dean. Then I got a job to be a dean, and then another job to be a dean, and then I was asked to be the interim chancellor at UC Riverside, and then popped over here. So I didn't have a plan, mm-hmm. but I did have an impulse to always take the next opportunity.
Yeah.
I think, oh, I can do that? Okay, I'll try it. See what it'll be like. So I hate to sound planless because I know we always tell everybody, you know, make a plan, you know, collect all this stuff. But my advice to people is always to whatever job you have, be outstanding at it. Don't plan for the next step all the time. Don't say to people, well, I'm really wanting to be vice president. You know, whatever you are, you know, do that.
And for me, I think I have a kind of familiar story. I was a tenant bar and waiting tables and going to Long Beach. And took me a little longer to get my undergrad. So I ran out of financial aid and I was kind of supporting myself. And when I graduated, the economy was awful. And so I tended bar for about a year looking for a job with a college degree and nobody was hiring. And I was finally able to get a professional degree, a professional job. And I worked really, really hard. And I was actually able to work my way up and I became a corporate vice president at a pretty young age, in my mid-30s.
Wow.
I had to move back east to do it. And my wife had to quit her job and she was a stay-at-home mom and I was vice president flying all over the place for this big company. And we were both pretty miserable. And I didn't want to travel because I wanted to see my kids more and she didn't want to be a stay-at-home mom because she wanted to work. And so we agreed that we would change all that and that we would both work and that I wouldn't be a vice president anymore. I'd take a job that was less demanding, but I could be home. And through a series of odd events, we ended up back here in Long Beach, and I ended up at Cal State Long Beach, not as a vice president, as an associate vice president. So they were excited to get somebody who was had all the experience I had and was willing to get paid a lot less than he was getting paid for a big company. And I was excited to be in my hometown and for my wife to go back to work so that I could take over a lot of the dad duties. And I hung around long enough for Jane to come. And she said, well, why don't you could be on vice president here? And I said, okay, Jane, if you insist. And that's how it happened.
I did insist.
Wow. That's so just like that's like so inspiring. It's inspiring, I guess. Like Naoki and I both had our highs and lows in our college careers for sure. So just like seeing you could come from somewhere with no plans necessarily and then reach there.
Could this be us? Are we looking at like our...
We say that to all our guests.
Yeah, that's true.
And Jane and I just want to be podcast guys.
I don't know.
Weird.
Yeah. And I would dress up when you come.
Oh. We should like switch jobs for a day, see what happens.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Come on. Especially next week.
Yeah, come on.
You mentioned that you encourage people to plan ahead, but you kind of just like live in what's going on right now and just be best at where you're at right now. But in terms of both of your jobs, how far ahead do you go into planning into what it is you're going to take down on your job?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. And of course, it varies by the environment that you're in. You know, we have our strategic plan that we call Beach 2030s, and we really went out on a limb because most people in the strategic planning world say, don't go beyond 5 years. But we were really looking at this 10-year window because we were saying we need to get used to seeing, you know, have this foresight. What's coming? What should we be preparing for so we're ready when it comes? And I gave a speech in, I think, 2018 as we were launching that. And I said, one of the examples I gave, so what would we do if there was a pandemic? Now, I had just read something from, you know, Bill Gates, and so it was on my mind, but I never thought that there would be a pandemic, you know. So, of course, so I would say we're kind of focused a lot on the now 2030 and, you know, the years past that. Like, what will the demographics be? How many high school graduates will there be? So on and so forth. But, you know, considering other situations, sometimes, you know, we knew that we were going to have a potential strike this week. So we started planning, you know, a month ago, like, well, how will we feed the residential students? How will we do that? So sometimes it's the long view, and sometimes it's pretty short. And if there's an emergency, of course, we have a whole protocol of emergency operators and teams and where people have to go. We had that big hazmat practice just a couple of weeks ago or a week ago. So that's an example of sometimes we get to plan, like we can just have we're just acting like there's an emergency, and other times we really have an emergency and we have to get in there.
Yeah, and I'll say when I came here as a pretty big boss, I was an associate vice president. I would generally plan out 3 to 5 years, which I think is common in the private sector and the public sector. But when I've been CFO now for quite some time, and CFOs think about 30 years out because we borrow money for 30 years. Mm. We're just like when you buy a house, we have to incur debt to build buildings and do other things. And so we need to think about what the world's going to be like and what the campus will be like 30 years ahead. And I do a lot of that thinking with Jane. Mm-hmm. It's important, right? So a good example is several years ago, I came back to talk to Jane and I said, you know what? We can't borrow any more money to build parking. And I know we have horrible parking problems, but by the time we're 10 years into our debt service, there aren't going to be people parking cars in this campus anymore. They're all going to be dropped off by autonomous cars. And she said, okay, well, if that's what you think, then let's not borrow money for parking anymore. And no. And I'm glad we did that because there's autonomous cars as taxis in several cities now, and I think they're probably ahead of schedule. So if we had borrowed 30 years worth of debt, and we use parking permits to pay the debt service, we'd be in big trouble in 20 years. Wow. And that wouldn't be my problem, probably wouldn't be Jane's problem, but it'd be somebody's problem. So it's important to think ahead and to use as many data points as you can to make good decisions.
Yeah, and then as far as like we started at the beginning of the podcast, talking about it's year 10 now for you at the college, just hitting certain milestones, I guess year 5, year 10 of being a president of the college. I just looked up the average president's tenure is 5.9 years, so like you made it so much further than that. Is there like ever an expectation of where you want to end up? How much longer you want to go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am above average on that metric specifically. That might be the only one that I'm above average on, yeah. You know, I'm still enjoying it very much. My thinking is if I ever thought, oh, I don't want to go to work, you know, I don't like this, I would say, okay, that's it. This life's too short not to be really having fun and feeling like I have purpose and feeling like things are going well. But, you know, there's no doubt that within the next few years I'll be looking to say, well, is it time? So, yeah, it's a very timely question. So if you notice me slipping, tell me right away because, you know, the age is not so vital to me as, you know, am I up for the job? Mm-hmm. You know, do I have the energy and the emotion, especially the emotional energy, because it can be be draining for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like we'll leave that to Scott to let you know if you're slipping.
Well, I'll tell you, because, you know, things, we're like a city, right? We have people living here all the time. It's a 24/7 operation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes things happen. And when Jane finds out, generally when I call her late at night or early in the morning, and I'm always thinking, oh, God, it's this problem. I got to call the president. And she knows what it is because it's my phone calling late at night. And Jane always goes, hey, Scott, what's going on? So as long as Jane answers the phone with a positive attitude, even though she knows I'm about to drop a bomb on her, I think she's in the right place.
I can't remember that. Yeah.
It's like as soon as she senses like, oh, Scott, what do you want?
She's no, yeah, exactly.
Why are you calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Always happy to hear from me, even when she knows it's going to be bad.
Okay, with this next question for the people watching or listening, I'm going to provide a little bit of context here. So August of 2022, Andy Fee announces that he's going to leave for the University of Washington. And then Ted Kadowaki, our former interim athletic director, he's brought back in, kind of runs the department for the entirety of the 22-23 season. But also in that time, Jeff Kamen, who was our women's basketball coach, who was an Andy Fee hire, had one of the best regular seasons that the women's basketball program has had in a long time, leaves as soon as the season's over. Mm-hmm. And then during the summer, Coach Valenzuela, who was our Dirtbacks head coach, he also leaves in the summer. So what I want to ask you guys is, well, I guess, and then we also hired, you know, Bobby Smither as a new AD, Amy Wright as a new women's basketball coach, and then we called up one of our coaches to lead our Dirtbags. Mm-hmm. So what I want to ask both of you guys is, throughout this whole thing that's happening, all of this leaving and coming in throughout the span of like a year almost, what is that like for you guys? What's going through your guys' heads as all this madness is happening in the department?
Well, the major thing for me is to figure out how to create a sense of continuity. You know, so we did a lot of talking about that, well, who could we have as an interim? Because when somebody leaves in August, we're not going to be able get to hire them, you know, August 31st or September 1st. And so I'm thinking about who do we put in as the interim, and that I'm thinking specifically AD, but the same thing in terms of the coaches. And, you know, I hate losing a coach that I have a lot of confidence in, but I get it. There's a lot of opportunities out there for people, and they have to think about what's best for them and their families and their careers. So I didn't experience it as crazy. I worried about the athletes. I worried that they would kind of lose confidence. What kind of place have I come to? Is this place falling apart? It's really my sense is always, how do you keep my own attitude and the experience of the employees and the students saying, oh yeah, this is the place. I chose this place and it's still that place. Mm-hmm. So that's what was on my mind.
Yeah, it's familiar territory for me. Even in my old job before I had athletics reporting to me, I used to help hire with all the hiring, all the different transitions. And in athletics, it's the same as everywhere in the university. People come, people go for a variety of reasons. It just happens a lot faster in athletics and a lot more often because of the nature of the business, right? Coaches constantly come and go. When Jane asked me to help out with athletics because there were some operational challenges and some financial challenges, I knew that there would be a lot of transitions because that's all part of fixing a department that needs some help. And so those were all positive things for me. I mean, you don't want to see a great coach like Valenzuela leave and Jeff. We don't want to see those guys go, but we want them to have a great career. We want them to go someplace where they're happy. And it's a chance for us to hire a wonderful coach like Amy. I love Amy. Mm-hmm. And she's come in, and I love watching her on the sideline jumping around. And she's just a fantastic coach. I know the athletes really respond to her, and she's fun to watch. So it's really an opportunity. And I hate to sound like a management book, but it's true. Bobby is a wonderful addition to our management team. He's been a great athletic director and such a positive personality. And he's actually joined my leadership team as like a member of my senior leadership team. And he just brings this energy and this positivity that it's just awesome to have in the room.
He was great when we had him here. He was
really, really,
really cool. Down to earth, mm-hmm. positive, happy, jokester.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, he agreed to play pickleball with us.
He did.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you're just mentioning it, obviously, but like all the other caveats too, just with not just coaching changes, but we have the financial things too going on, NIL, being a mid-major and having to compete with colleges that can spend like so much more money, and then we have the pyramid in that financial situation. So just how much more does that kind of weigh on the minds too?
Well, I let Scott worry about it because I'm on the side of trying to raise private money, right? But he's on the side of trying to figure out how much we can put toward it and who we have to borrow and so on and so forth. So it's a big worry.
It is, but you know, it's this, it's not unlike just running the university. I mean, we spend most of our time worrying about, or I worry, Jane isn't worried as much, but we worry about our students. We want them to be successful. It's the same thing with our student athletes. We want them to have the best experience. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of financial challenges in the CSU, so we spend a lot of time worrying about money. Same thing in athletics. Every athletics department has the same challenges other than the Big Five. Is that correct, Jane?
I think that's really good.
They
correct.
Do not
certainly
have
that
same
problem. Certainly
in the
Big West.
Yeah, exactly. West, and right. So it's a little more intense, kind of the same thing I just talked about. It's a little more intense because it happens quickly, and there's maybe more profound financial pressures because there's so many moving parts. But it's essentially the same job. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if at the end of the day the athletes feel successful and they're happy, I think we did a good job managing the program.
We're happy.
Speaking of a successful athlete, this is something that just developed recently, but Misty May Traynor just was one of the recipients for the Silver Anniversary Award by the NCAA.
Fabulous.
I looked this up earlier. She's in the same recipient class as John Cena, which is absurd. Like he did time at Springfield College as a football player, but it's just, to me, it's like Misty May Traynor and John Cena in the same breath is absolutely insane. But how do you guys, what are you guys' thoughts on just one of our athletes having the recipient of one of the most exclusive awards in all of college?
Oh, it's fabulous.
Sports.
And I've been at camps where we have, young women in this case. And Misty May is always mentioned to them that we were the home for her, that, you know, that vaulted her into Olympic success. And so, so on that, it's great for our persona, our reputation. And then I think she's been such a successful person, you know, just giving back to the community, being coach at LBCC, nice family. So it's just nice to kind of be her friend.
I mean, I don't want to make things super controversial here, but I think Misty May could take John Cena.
Ooh.
I'm saying it right Ooh. Here on this podcast.
Book that. WrestleMania WrestleMania's like in 3 months. We need that.
Yeah, I mean, continuing with that string of positive announcements, too, though, we see more opportunities for athletes, obviously, with the new edition of the men's baseball tournament for the Big West.
Yeah.
And then the softball tournament and the men's tournament will be here in 2027. So just, like, seeing opportunities like that. We also had volleyball here. We're going to have volleyball for men soon. That's right. So just, like, getting to host and play host for these opportunities. What's that like?
Oh, I think it's magical for our players and for our regular supporters, and I think it puts us into a national spotlight that we really want. You know, we're not the biggest program in the country, but we are really good at, you know, some things, and so I love that, and I know that the players really like it. And certainly the alums love it. And when I get into the pyramid and I see the student section all filled up, I'm just like, yes, this is fabulous.
Well, one of my favorite stories is I had the wonderful opportunity to go to Paris a few years ago, and I was in the Louvre Museum. Ooh. And I was standing on a staircase with a tour group, and I was wearing my Dirtbags t-shirt. And a guy walked by me and goes, "Hey, Dirtbags Baseball."
Oh, that's amazing.
I was like, "Go Beach." we may be small, but we're big. It depends on where you are. At the Louvre, we're big.
Was it a French guy that said
no, it? No, some dude from Long Beach, I'm guessing, or from California for sure.
This is a French guy. This is a big Dirtbags
fan. Yeah, he didn't have an accent. No.
That would have been a better story. Maybe the next time you tell that story, you could kind
local.
Of say.
Some,
you
know, probably some guy.
C'est bon. Dirt bag.
Some guy just got out of JoJo's, flew to Paris, and hey, that dude's got a dirt bag shirt on. Let me go talk to him.
I just saw that some movie's going to have, or something's going to have Joe Jost as a background.
Is
that
right? The NFL commercials.
NFL commercial.
Right? Mm-hmm. Whoa. That's a classic.
Speaking of, you said we're, you know, one of the biggest programs, but one of the biggest things about our campus is the pyramid, that gymnasium.
Iconic.
Yeah, and we know that, you know, over the last year or so, there's been a lot of murmurs about what's going to happen to it, whether it's going to be remodeled, which we hear it might be a bit pricey, or we also think it's going to...
Oh, yeah.
We're also thinking about possibly tearing it down and building something new. What are you guys' stances on the pyramid and what you guys think should happen?
Well, we just engaged an engineering firm for many big bucks, as a matter of fact, to come up with solutions. I would prefer... I mean, the pyramid's part of our whole brand,
right.
And I'd have to change all my PowerPoint slides. I mean, it would really be hard. But so we're hoping they can come up with something that that they can come up with something that allows us to keep the pyramid, you know, as it looks now, but not leak. That's the bottom line. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, I just want to clarify, the pyramid has always leaked. It's not a new problem.
They didn't tell me that when I came.
Oh, really?
And it's an unusual design, and the HVAC system was never able to properly heat and cool. So there's always been kind of inside clouds that rain on people because of the way the air moves. And so it's a wonderful venue. We love it, but it's always been a bit of a facilities challenge. So this isn't a new issue.
Yeah.
It's made out of metal. It's got a metal skin, and the metal has expanded and contracted for 20 something years now. So, whatever tiny little problems there were have become bigger. Right. And that's why it feels like things have gotten worse. And we spent a ton of money literally with guys on ropes, not our guys, a contractor. And they've tried to squish in the little stuff that stops water from getting into cracks. And so all the wonderful people that come up to me at sporting events and say, hey, you should do what that guy in the commercial does. He makes a boat out of screens and then he squishes the stuff on there and it's watertight. We've already tried that. So no need to bring it up again. We tried it, it didn't work.
Get the Flex Seal.
The Flex Seal, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
And so it's we have lots of older buildings on campus, and we struggle to keep them in the best shape possible and to continue to make them great places to learn and work in with the funding we get from the state, which has decreased significantly over years.
To almost zero.
To zero, yeah. And so we're going to find a solution, I mean, because we have to. I would agree with Jane. It's become such a big part of Long Beach and such a big part of, you know, when you drive by the 405 and you look over and there's that big blue pyramid for some reason in the middle of East Long Beach, it would be life altering to have that disappear. So I don't think that's a plan. I think we're looking for the best possible solution that we can afford in the short term. And so that's where we're at. And Jane's right. We're waiting for a new report to see if there's an alternative that we haven't considered yet.
And then once we get that information, we'll have it out for you.
Good. No, we'd love to just be ready to do something.
Yeah, another big part, I think, about the beach that kind of gets lost with the recent coaching carousel is just, like, how many of our coaches are long-term tenured? Dan Monson, Kim Sauter, Mauricio Ingrassi, obviously. And then so many of the people around the program as well, the late Pat West. Just what was that like to have these people almost welcome you as someone who's been here for 10 years, but they've been here longer than you even.
Yes, yeah, they have. Yeah, well, I mean, I have generally been just in love with our coaches. I think they, to me, represent some of the best concerns for student health and wellness. They're very tuned into mental health. You know, they stay calm. You know, my worst example of a coach was Bobby Knight, even though I know people loved him, but I thought, he would never work for me. That would be it. Throw one chair and you're out of here. So it's been great to have them, and I'm in touch with them all the time. I write them every week during their seasons, and I look to see who won, who lost, and congratulate and try to commiserate with the others. Go to the games, talk to them. So it's great, but you know, there's also going to be there's change, and there's always change in that. So I think. Certainly, Kim, just recently, Big West champs last year, right? Mm-hmm. Mauricio's group just at the end just didn't make that, you know, those penalty kicks or what happened. But other times it's been great. And I have grandchildren who were coached by Lena Solizano and Alicia. Yeah. They were here for the 2020 summer, so they follow Lena in her pro career, and they were listening to the recent draft of the women's soccer, and they were so upset that Alicia wasn't drafted. So we're very tied in to that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's a really big opportunity for our alums and our current students to kind of cross paths in the pyramid or wherever we're playing, because you got the people that have been Dirtbags fans back before they were even called the Dirtbags. And they're sitting next to our current students that are just excited to see the team play. I think it's that history kind of comes alive when you go to a sporting event. And it's great. I mean, I see a lot of old friends at games, and then you see the students in the student section going crazy and the hot dogs running around and hot dogs. Mom's got her hot dog mom t-shirt. It's just great. It's just so much fun.
But you mentioned Pat West, and what a loss. Yeah. I mean, she was just an icon for everyone. Her just loved the athletes and was, you know, loved by everybody who knows her.
Yeah.
How do we move on from that? I feel bad.
Sorry.
No, you're good. No, this is a good question. The Pat was like a big pillar in our,
yes,
in our community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think we remember we were writing the story about it and we were doing our research on it. And I was just like, I remember I would see her at the games like all the time.
Yeah. Yes.
Him and I, we worked almost every single game in that pyramid last semester as a part of the 49ers.
Yeah.
And you know, just get to say hi to Pat West and then seeing a lot of the alumni as well. Like, you know, one of the things that's really cool, like bringing in Coach Tyler Hildebrand, who had like a very storied career here. And then afterwards, what was that like for him to ask him to basically come back home just like how you did?
Yeah, well, he certainly was recruited by Andy and so felt a little bit bad that Andy left right after, you know, Tyler showed up. But Tyler is very dedicated to Long Beach, loves the recruits he has, you know. You know, I do worry. I mean, he's certainly a hot prospect. And, you know, he's seen the other side of life with being at the University of Nebraska, which I was there for 12 years, too. Mm-hmm. So I know what their budget is for athletics. And it's really different from ours. So I just hope we can hold on to Tyler and wish him all the luck in the world.
And, you know, it's more than just a job, right? Tyler had a chance to come home. He had a chance to work with Alan Knipe, and, you know, those two are inseparable, I think.
Yeah. Mm.
And what a great opportunity for Tyler to have a colleague like that and learn. And so, you know, it's great for us to have him here. It's great for him to kind of have a family and coming to a place where you know the culture and, you know where everybody knows your name, I guess. What a great opportunity. You don't get a lot of those in your career, especially when you're a coach that moves.
Right,
that will eventually move. It's wonderful.
He's for sure the best dressed coach on game day. His game day fits are phenomenal.
I need to pay more attention.
He wore like the pink button up. He's got the nice pants on. He'll have some Jordans
Everything's
on.
Freshly
Everything gray. Is like.
Is that right?
Yeah, starched. No sweating. Iron, nothing, none.
No.
He's the best dressed coach I think I've ever seen.
Thank you for telling me that. I'm gonna take a picture of him now every time.
The flyest coach. The flyest coach. Okay. Now we're going to kind of switch gears a little bit here. As I mentioned at the top, we are recording this on January 19th. So it's been announced that there's going to be a CFA faculty strike starting on January 22nd, so next Monday. This will come out on the Wednesday of the strike. And one of the things we have you guys here. So if we could just offer some initial thoughts and some just things that's on your mind in the midst of what's happening.
Yeah, well, of course, the faculty has a complete right to strike, and I agree that they're not paid enough. I don't have any kind of role in the negotiations. That's done entirely at the chancellor's office. We did get good news just recently that the Teamsters have settled, so we were expecting a Teamsters CFA strike, but it looks like, I guess it will just be CFA. So we've been in touch with the leaders and trying to help them where we can. You know, can we bring trash barrels so that they have places to throw things? Can we do this and that? So, you know, it's uncomfortable. I hate that our students will be deprived. Some of them will be deprived of their faculty members and their classroom experiences. Some will not. You know, classes are not canceled. We're counting on the faculty to let their students know they're going to be there or not. The campus is open, so everybody should feel free to come if they wish, but everybody should feel free to strike if they wish, and everyone should feel free not to strike if they wish. So those are kind of my thoughts. I'm very in favor of faculty getting, a living wage in this expensive area of California.
Yeah, I mean, I was an HR practitioner for years and years and years, and for coming to the campus was a labor negotiator. I actually negotiated union contracts for a big company. And so it's a little bit different here because the company's not going to go away, right? And that's a big piece of negotiating contracts outside in the private sector. And your employees aren't going to go away. Generally, our employees stay and our faculty definitely stay. And so what we all hope for is that we get through this and that everybody's able to kind of come back together when it's over and still be collegial and be still all working together to try to make the student experience as great as possible. It's not fun to have labor problems. It's not fun when it's in the private sector. It's not fun when it's here. But it's part of working in a higher ed institution with a unionized faculty. We've had, I think I told Jane, this is maybe the fourth time that we've thought we were going to have strikes. This is the first time we've actually going to have a week-long labor action in my career here. And so I've prepared a lot. in the past, and this will be the first time where we actually see kind of this kind of thing. I'm just hoping to get to the other side and finding a way forward with everybody.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, imagine we have 3,000 students who are live on campus. We have to figure out how to feed them if, mm-hmm. you know, if trucks wouldn't cross a picket line. So at every level, there's labs that have animals, there's hazardous material. So you can imagine that on, you know, the our side, in a sense. I hate to put us on sides because we're all mm-hmm. in the same community. But, you know, we have a lot of work to do to protect, you know, especially the residential students, but also some of our other lab and other assets.
Yeah.
It's the last thing, not strike related at all, but just what do you guys think about the campus representation and just regards to student media, especially if athletics have recent Daily 49er, 22 West, we have Beach TV News, just a lot more representation from media, I think, and a lot more noticeable on campus as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You mean specifically around athletics?
The whole campus in general, but yeah. Athletics geared as well.
Yeah, sure. Because that's what you guys are the experts in. Yeah. No, I've been really impressed. You know, I don't know who does everything, but for example, the, you know, the video boards and the playbacks and the interaction with ESPN Plus or One or whatever ones we do. And then just the reporting on sports that I see in the Daily 49er and 22 West. I mean, I think it's really valuable because especially if you live on campus, you have easy access. But if you have to come back for a game, you know, it's really nice that you all have been able to create kind of a buzz. Like, this is really worth coming back to. And I think the athletics department has kind of picked up their game too in terms of activities mm-hmm. and swag and giveaways and this and that. So I'm very pleased with the work that you all have been doing to kind of increase our visibility.
Yeah, and I mean, I can say definitively, this is my favorite podcast I've been on.
This is the only one.
I'm second in the numbers, all right? But just don't start punching the gift horse in the mouth there. But I can tell you this, and it's been my best work at a podcast. Would you say that, Jane?
Of all the ones we've done together, this is by far the best.
I just wish that people were as excited for everything we do on campus as the people are that are trying to get that free pizza in the pyramid every time they...
Oh, yeah, that's
Jesus, the people jumping from 30, 40 feet in the air to try to get that pizza.
Well, the other day when we were playing, who were we playing? Anyway, Dominguez Hills, maybe? Mm-hmm. Anyway, when the opposing team had two foul shots they missed in a row, and so the gift cards.
But
the kind of wind-up to that people were going crazy when the mm-hmm. – and it was actually a pretty full game. I mean, there's a lot of people at that game, and – I'm embarrassed that I forget who they were now, but when you go to as much stuff as I go to, I'm going to explain it. My brain is just too filled up. So it just makes it more fun. So, you know, the creativity that you all bring and the reporting that you bring and then interacting with others who are kind of helping with PR and, you know, ticketing ideas. I think we're in a really good era, but we're in an era that we're also improving. We've hired, for the first time, really, a true development director to actually raise funds. And that's her actual job. And she was a student athlete herself. And so I'm very optimistic about the future of beach athletics, despite what the NCAA is doing.
Well, with Bobby Smithern at the helm, it looks very, very bright.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I agree. And we have great leadership also at the Big West. Dan Butterly is a relatively new Big West commissioner. I happened to be the chair of the board of directors during that year, so I actually got to handle that search, and I've been really pleased. He's worked a lot more and better deals for the Big West, and we're benefiting from that. You know, as I saw what he was doing, I was feeling like we were the best kept secret on the, you know, in major conferences or mid-major conferences, but that's not the case anymore. And he's also able to pull people together. So we're working on, as I said, kind of what will we stand for now in this newly imagined NCAA? So I'm really pleased with his leadership.
I have one more question. What went into the decision of letting class of 24 walk for commencement this year?
Well, we had wanted to do it, of course, every time.
Right.
You know, we just couldn't figure out the timing, and we're yet to see if people will stay. This means the ceremonies are long.
Yeah.
But we're going to try to mitigate that as best we can. So the answer is students wanted to do it.
Right.
And we, you know, it's their party. We wanted to do what they wanted to do, but we couldn't, you know, the first 2 years it was, we were worried about COVID, yeah, really. Mm-hmm. And then the next year we were just like, we don't know how to fit all these names in. But, you know, the last thing I want to do, and I know no one on our team wants to do, is disappoint students at this kind of major milestone, mm-hmm, of their lives. So it was all the student, I'm going to say pressure, but I didn't experience it so much as pressure, but all the student input, you know, and as I said, it's your party, so you should have it the way you want. But, you know, there are just limits. I wish we could do it on campus, but we've just outgrown, yeah, all of our, yeah, venues. And the students who come to the graduation at Angel Stadium, even before now, that they'll hear their names and walk the stage. I mean, that was a joy. Those were joyous events. You know, mm-hmm, people were after it. We had the DJ and they were dancing and we had all this stuff. And so and during it, they were clapping and yelling and, you know, loving to see themselves on the big screen and stuff. So I think we did the best we can, and I hope this next iteration will be appreciated and will be successful. We have gotten rid of the afternoon events, commencements, because it's so hot, mm-hmm, and, you know, students, they're in the sun, and so, yeah, we kind of try to work around student safety and also the people who come. Mm-hmm. So the great thing about Angel, you can have so many people come, mm-hmm, and watch you.
That's true. Because
that's a huge stadium, so it's all good.
Huge.
Yeah, I mean, I think people don't realize the size of our ceremonies on campus. I think we could accommodate 12,000 people at the big ceremonies, and we had to turn people away. And moving 12,000 people on and off campus in one tiny part of the campus is a monumental task, you know. And I've got every one of my employees out working lots of overtime just to try to accommodate that, and getting the grandmas and people with mobility issues in and out of a grassy part of the campus wasn't an easy thing. Yeah. And so Angel Stadium is built specifically to bring thousands and thousands of people, true, there, and we get them in and we get them out and they get parked, and the staff over there is just so good at it. Yeah. We're hoping we can bring the best things that the Angel Stadium has to offer, which is all of that, along with reading names. And we're hoping that the people whose last names begin with Z or whoever's at the end has as many people in the stands cheering them on as the people at the very beginning of the procession. And I know that they'll have all of the administrators, because we're on the stage cheering for everybody.
We'll be there.
Hopefully the rest of their student colleagues will be there as well, and their families.
In all my years of doing commencements, and, you know, even on campus, we had gotten to the point where we were having 11 or 12 ceremonies in order, yeah, to manage. And one time it rained. But I would be standing and shaking hands, and I wasn't looking at the audience. When I turned around, it was almost empty. Do you remember that?
Oh,
that
day?
It was crazy. I was like, yay for you people who stayed. You're so brave. Southern California, and you're here.
That, I think that was our most precarious graduation, because Jane was shaking hands, and I was sitting with my big gown on in the back, but I was on the phone with the police chief because there was lightning, and I was trying to figure out if we had to cancel and if we had to evacuate. And I'm talking to the chief, and everyone's like, look at how rude this guy is. He's on his phone, and he's on the dais. And they didn't realize that, you know, I was really, really nervous. And then when the last person walked, I'm like, Jane, we got to get out of here. We're in a metal stand and there's lightning flashing in the skies.
I forgot that part. Yeah, see, that's right. He's the official worrier. Yeah,
well, everybody worries when there's lightning and you're sitting in metal stands. But
yeah, he didn't tell me that while I was shaking hands. That was good, because I would have been nervous
It was. We got rained on that
we
day.
Did get rained on, but yeah, we wear those big hats too.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
It's fine. It was fine.
We'd like to thank you guys for being here and joining us today. And I like, was it taking the time? And I know it's like a super chaotic time. Not chaotic, but it's a really
organized chaos.
Organized chaos. Time right now. But we appreciate taking the time talking about some sports and talking about some serious topics and, you know, getting to know you guys better. I think that's one of the things that we've been able to benefit today, is getting to know you guys
100%.
A little bit, not personal, but the things that no one else would really know about if you hadn't listened to this podcast. So, with that being said, thank you guys for joining us for season three premiere of Teed Up. Thank you to our video editor and producer, Aiden Swanepoel, and our multimedia producer, Al Nicklin. If you want to stay up to date on the latest in Long Beach State sports, check out our website, Dilly49er.com, and follow us on socials at Dilly49er. Did you guys have like anything to say to the people before we
go beach?
Go beach.
You guys were awesome. Thanks so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we do this thing where we look at the camera and we hold up this heart right here.
Oh, that's a heart.
Yeah. Well, you can put whatever heart you want. This is our brand heart.
Oh, jeez.
Okay.
I don't think I did it right.
And we'll catch you on the next one. Let's go. Yeah.